With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Big Blue Insider is on. News Radio 630 WLAP and the iHeartRadio app. To interact with the show, call us at 859-280-2287. That's 859-280-CATS. Or you can tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider, hour number two of our program. Dick Gabriel, Billy Rutledge, and again, bear with us. We are having a little bit of technical difficulty, so we are coming to you through the miracle of cell phones. And we talked a lot of football in hour number one. We have more coming up, but we do want to shift gears right now and talk about a different sport. And I will, as a setup for one sport, talk about another. You may have seen this on social media that Kofi Cockburn, the big man from Illinois, has pulled out of the NBA draft. The deadline is tomorrow, but has not yet decided where he will play college ball next season, either a return to Illinois or quite possibly Kentucky, because Orlando Antigua was the guy who recruited him to Illinois, and as we all know, he is at Kentucky now, and so is Chin Coleman, another former Illinois assistant coach. So he might become a Wildcat, and I bring that up because my next guest is a college coach, very successful throughout his head coaching career, but especially this year, Craig Skinner, the coach of the NCAA champion Kentucky Wildcat volleyball team. How are you tonight, Coach?
Good, Dick. How you doing tonight?
We're well. Thank you so much for taking time. I know you're spending time with the family and recruiting and working. And I wanted to double back to you. I wanted to give you some time after the season. We talked to some of your players, but I wanted to find out in a minute. I'm going to ask you about what it's been like for you. But I got to ask you up front. The transfer portal has changed the lives of everybody involved in college athletics. That's not, I don't think, an exaggeration, including those of us who cover it. What kind of a headache, or I don't know if that's the right term for it, but what kind of a challenge has it been for you and your staff? Do you find yourself re-recruiting kids? Do you find yourself scanning the transfer portal whenever you need to?
Yeah, it's a good question because it's the word of the year in terms of college athletics. You know, outside of NIL, the transfer portal is the word or couple words of the year. And how to handle and navigate that. I think to be honest, we've had the transfers in, transfers out. I wouldn't say our program is one that lives and dies on transfers and players coming in and out. So I think it probably depends on what the culture of your program is and how you want to go about it. But we've always tried to build a program on, we want players that want to be part of our program because of how we do things and what our program is about, the type of people we bring in. And so I wouldn't say that our program in general has changed a whole lot or had to adjust, you know, what we do or how we recruit players because of the new way that people look at things. But, you know, it's certainly different. I mean, there's ever-evolving deals. And before this year, you know, we could only take transfers within the SEC conference if they had 2 years of eligibility. Well, that has changed, and we can with only 1 year of eligibility. But I try not to look at it differently, only because when you're recruiting athletes, recruiting people, you want them to be part of your program for their career. And you know, I don't think it necessarily has changed our message or changed how we treat our current players. And so, long-winded answer, but I think that's kind of where we are at this point.
Well, no, it's not an easy answer. It's not an easy issue right now for coaches anywhere, in any sport, quite frankly. So, you know, it is a challenge. And you mentioned the culture of your program. And you had a young lady transfer in a couple of years ago, did not get a chance to play a whole lot, probably not as much as she liked, but was part of a championship team. So, you know, things can work out.
Yep. There's no question, and I think as programs evolve and things change, the needs are different each and every year, and part of what we're, you know, kind of navigate, you know, right now is NIL and all that stuff, but more importantly, navigate, you know, what happens with the COVID year of eligibility and, you know, are people coming back or not coming back? This is the only year that the seniors could come back and your scholarship wouldn't count against you if they did stay. Going forward, if they decide they want to stay an extra year, then that scholarship would count against your limits. And so then you really have to decide how you're going to manage, you know, when you recruit 2022s, when you recruit 2023s, and how many scholarships you're going to have for those particular years.
Well, that said, I wanted to ask you, I'll double back to my my first question, which was just what has life been like for you post-championship? I know you've been pulled in many directions, but did you have a whole lot of time to celebrate it? And you had to deal with the NIL, but you've got to get back on the recruiting trail.
Well, it's definitely the life we live. I mean, you certainly in a perfect world would like to have your, you know, championship and then have 9 months to get through it and recruit and enjoy it and celebrate and all that stuff. And so it seems like we're living 9 months and crammed into 3 months from recruiting to family and camps and all that type of stuff. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, obviously winning a national championship is something we all dream about and work towards. And so we're extremely happy where we are. But we spent, my wife and I spent a few days at a resort for a couple, you know, long weekends in May. And we're hoping to get back on vacation at the end of July to spend a few days to relax, put our feet up and enjoy what's happened.
Craig, is it easy to get back on the recruiting trail after a national championship, or are you motivated to do it all over again?
You're definitely motivated. I mean, once you know what that feeling is like, you want to feel it again, and you want to experience it again, and you want to have your players understand what it's like to be in those situations. So, yes, it's because it's the lifeblood of what we do. You want to get out there and you want to compete, and you're a competitor, and you know that your teams you're playing against are out on the road recruiting, so you want to be out there and do it. And but it's you know, the other part of it is because all this has happened so fast, it's, you know, and we haven't been able to recruit for the last year and a half, it's all happening at once. So the last, since July 5th or June 4th has happened, we've been on the road nonstop since that time. And so it's crazy. It's definitely a time that we've never experienced before.
Well, you know, you were able to coach a team through a pandemic and through basically a double season and with Zoom calls, you're recruiting. And so now, you know, it's going to be a snap, right, to get back to the more conventional life.
That's right. No problem. No, you know, we'll just rinse and repeat, you know, just do it all over again.
You know, it's interesting hearing you talking about wanting to do it all over again. And why not? But, you know, I've been at this for quite a while. I've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of coaches who have had great moments like yours, John Calipari's championships and, you know, Mark Stoops bowl games and Nick Mangione winning a regional for the first time in school history and John Cohen winning the title. And you all have the same reaction, and that is how happy you are for the players, just getting to sit back and watch for a moment. I mean, you and your staff had the group hug. And by the way, I got to watch part of your championship match again today on ESPNU. It was such a great match. But I watched, you know, the group hug at the end, and then you guys just watch your players celebrate. What's that like?
You know, I'm glad you said that, because I think that's the feeling that you want people to have that have never experienced it before. And, you know, whether you've won a conference championship or national championship, I mean, you know, the ultimate is winning a national championship, and I was able to feel it as an assistant coach. And I will never forget the moments, the people, the locker room, you know, all that type of stuff. And anyone that's won a conference championship, I mean, you cannot buy that. You can't replace it with any material goods. You can't go on a vacation, all of a sudden experience what it's like, because of all the blood, sweat, and tears that go into something like that and the sacrifices that people make to be part of it, to ultimately come out on top is an indescribable feeling. And I've always wanted people to feel what that's like. And fortunately, you know, my wife was able to win conference championships in Nebraska in soccer, and we have been able to do it. So we've talked about it. And when you've experienced that and been part of it, you just want other people to feel what it's like, because you cannot buy it. It's not a material good. It's not a possession. It's a feeling that you want other people to experience. And so I think that's why you see the elation and the hugs and the tears and all that stuff in between. It's such an amazing feeling.
Craig, I think it would be an understatement to call this past season walking a tightrope with all of the safety precautions that the team had to take because of COVID-19. But what we've heard from some other teams, Craig, is that the guys and the girls just weren't able to bond the same way. They weren't able to eat their meals together the same ways. They weren't able to communicate the same ways. Was that the same with this volleyball team, or did you feel like this was a very close team regardless of the COVID issues?
You know, Billy, good question. I mean, I think we were a close team. I think that we've all respected each other, and the players respect each other and where they came from and all that stuff. But it was a challenge, and there were moments, and you talk about walking a tightrope, where it was, you could sense that people were ready to throw in the towel, or is it worth it? You know, why are we doing this? You know, there were definitely those feelings, those moments when a weekend was canceled or whatever it may be. But you know, going back to, you know, being together and eating together and team meals and chemistry, our first meal together in the same room at the same time was not until April 12th or April 13th when we got to Omaha. And that's from we started August 4th. And so part of our excitement of being in Omaha is when we actually got to be in the same room, and just it wasn't on cue that, hey, we got a bond here. We have to have chemistry. We got to read something and share. It was like, hey, we can just sit there. And if conversation came along, then it came along. If we jokes came along, they came along. And those are big reasons why we had such great chemistry in Omaha. And it was exciting to have those moments again as a team.
That shocks me. I did not know that. As much as I was around you guys and covering your matches, I did not know that your first meal together was in Omaha. That is phenomenal. Well, before I let you go, I got to tell you, and I'm sure you've heard it too, that I've lost track of the number of people, Craig, and you know I'm a shameless shill for volleyball, but I've lost track of the number of people who say, after watching your team through the tournament, have said to me, I'm going next year. I'm going to go to games next year. I'm going to go and watch volleyball. How much have you heard that?
It's been a lot, and not, you know, again, you know, when Megan and I left Nebraska, we wanted to go to a place like Kentucky where if you do something special, the people will 100% buy in. And the number of stories we've heard from neighbors, from friends, from family, from strangers, from people you run into in the grocery store or, you know, shopping or whatever, me or at a restaurant, that have just said, hey, I was unbelievable the whole time. I watched every match. I was up till 1:30 in the morning. At the national championship, we were at this restaurant or this bar, and cannot wait to see you guys play again. And we've already bought our season tickets. You know, that type of enthusiasm is so cool. And again, the reason why we left Nebraska to come to Kentucky.
Well, I got to tell you, and you know, I've seen a few matches in my day, that, and obviously the stakes were so high, but I said that in terms of the level, and I'm not nearly as learned at the sport as you are, obviously, but the level of play in that championship match, Craig, I felt like was similar, and I don't know if you saw the game, to Gonzaga-UCLA in the NCAA tournament. It was just phenomenal. The athleticism, the way both teams left it on the floor, that was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen.
That's the greatest match I've ever been a part of, and I can honestly say that. I think even if you would ask Jared Elliott, the coach at Texas, he would – I mean – neither Texas did not deserve to lose that match. And
no,
they played
right.
Unbelievable, and we just happened to play better that night. And for us to hit the hitting percentage we did against a defensive team like Texas, and for them to hit the hitting percentage they did against us, as good a defensive team we were, is really unthinkable. And so I think the sport of volleyball really won that night, and fortunately we were the team that came out with the trophy.
Very well put. The sport won that match, and You know, I was on the Zoom calls, of course, after, and the Texas coach and players both said, we played really well. Kentucky played better, and that's what you want to see in a championship match. Craig Skinner, the head coach of the NCAA champion Kentucky Wildcats, going to crank up pretty soon, coach, and I'll be there to watch. Thanks so much for your time. I know it's precious right now.
Outstanding, guys. Thanks for having me, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks. Have a good one. Craig Skinner, and we're back in just a few here on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to Craig Skinner for joining us. A couple of notes off the Twitter feed. Jimmy from the Garden of Eden heard us talking about Jessica Springsteen and the fact that she has made the United States Olympic equestrian jumping team. And I mentioned the fact that she had competed more than once here in Lexington at the Kentucky Horse Park. And the Jimmy tweeted, I did entertainment for the hospitality room when Springsteen was at the horse show at Alltech Arena. He met him, his wife, and daughter, took their requests. He loved the Stones and talked to him a bunch, got his autograph, nice guy, very personable. That's good to hear, Jimmy, and I'm glad that you chatted him up. And it's interesting that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have come up to him. I'm your biggest fan. I've been following you. The fact that you guys talked about another band, I think, is very cool. And, yeah, the Stones, yeah, pretty good. Rex Chapman is at the NBA Finals. Of course, he is rooting like crazy for his former homies, the Phoenix Suns. But he just tweeted, he said, I watched Giannis's pregame workout, and he looked great, bouncy, surprising, is what Rex tweeted. Billy, all reports had indicated that Giannis was not going to play tonight.
You know, I think the pressure on this series, Dick, has shifted over to the Suns with Chris Paul trying to get his first finals or in his first finals appearance, trying to get his first title. And, you know, kind of just how quickly they've been able to put it together. You know, with Giannis not 100%, at least what I thought, you know, I think the pressure has been on the Suns. But if you're telling me if Giannis and Rex Chapman's got the inside source that Giannis is ready to go, then I may be ready to bet Middleton and the Bucks to win, but I'm not sure. What
now,
do you think?
Don't be that media person who says that Rex says this or that. All Rex said was he watched him, and he was bouncy. You know, he didn't say he's ready to go. He just said he was bouncy. But you know as well as I that when that adrenaline kicks in, it's different when they start playing. And they want to win the series. Not you want to win this first game, but do you risk playing Giannis? You know, do you put him out there and let him decide? That's a tough call. And here's the other thing, Billy. You're right about pressure on the Suns because they were so great this year after being, you know, lousy up until the bubble last year. But, you know, Milwaukee's been in this position like for the third straight year. Don't you think there's more pressure on them?
You know, if Giannis is healthy, I mean, I think you could scratch this season up if he's not 100% and say, oh, well, we've got another year Giannis. We can get back there to it. But I feel like the stars have really aligned for the Suns to jump out of nowhere and surprise people by taking a championship away. I'm concerned. I am concerned, though, that you don't believe in the old Rex Chapman and some of his analysis here. I think you got to take his word as gospel, the internet king, Rex Chapman, and obviously bet the Bucks.
You're surprised that I'm not reading between the lines. I guess I've just been burned too many times for that. Plus, the other thing to remember is Rex is a Suns fan. So is he looking at Giannis? You know, I mean, is he like, oh my gosh, he's okay, he's going to play because Giannis will be the best player on the floor when he's right. But you know, he's a two-time MVP. By the way, Darren Revelle, who's a veteran business reporter, says that a naming rights sponsor would have received value worth $7.75 million if the Phoenix Suns arena had a name on it. For the finals.
Wow.
We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. And we'll hear from Darian Kennard on 630 WLAP.
You're listening to Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Billy Rutledge. And if you're just joining us, yeah, it sounds like we're on the phone because we are. our digital voodoo has crashed for the day. So it could have been weather-related. It doesn't really matter what, but we certainly intend to have it cleared up by tomorrow. So thank you, if you've been with us from the beginning, for bearing with us. And we will be with you for a little while longer this way. Before we get back to Kentucky football, I did want to pass this along. And this is not going to mean much of in terms of the name to many of you. It meant something to me because I worked in Dallas for a couple of years with the old Southwest Conference Network. But there was a running back when Rice had a really great football program named Dickie Maigle. And he was a star running back, and he is forever going to be known. He just passed away at the age of 86 on Sunday. He has been and forever will be known as the guy who was running the ball in the 1954 Cotton Bowl against Alabama when a Bama player came off the bench and tackled him. He took a handoff from the Owls 5, swept around right end, and he motored past a defensive back, Billy, named Bart Starr, who was a two-way player, obviously, D-back and quarterback, blew past the rest of the Alabama defenders and was, of course, heading for the end zone. And right around midfield, a guy named Tommy Lewis came off the bench and threw a blindside block that knocked him to the ground. Lewis runs back to the bench. The officials moved in, and without further review, because obviously there wasn't any, they awarded him the touchdown. So he got a 95-yard touchdown run, even though he was knocked down at around the 50. Now, he also had a TD run of 79 and one of 34. So that gave him, officially, 265 yards rushing on just 11 carries. Still a single-game Rice record for rushing yards. And get this, both players went on the Ed Sullivan Show and a bunch of other national TV shows. And Lewis, you know, they would ask him, what in the world got into you? And he said, I was just too full of Alabama to watch Maigle run for a touchdown. And Maigle said it was like running down an alley and somebody suddenly opens a door. That sports oddity of 1954 was named the sports oddity, of course, of the year in the AP poll.
Wow.
So, yeah, Lewis died about 7 years ago. He was a fullback and a co-captain of that team. Maigle was the overall 10th pick in the draft by the Niners in 55, made the Pro Bowl as a defensive back, and had 28 career interceptions in 73 games. Played for the Niners, the Steelers, and came back to Texas and played for the Dallas Cowboys for a year. And again, that name, it's a great story. And that name doesn't mean anything to people here unless they have a deep history, a sense of history. But I heard about it. See, when I was down there, that is one of those legendary names. You know, Dickie, well, you know, it's like just like when Dickie Maigle got tackled. I'm like, who's that? You know, and it was really, really a great story.
Well, that's interesting that they gave him the touchdown, Dick. Because I have thought of that very scenario many times on what would happen, and if I was the coach of a team and they were about to score on me in the final play, maybe like a Music City Miracle-esque, why not just throw somebody out there and just hope that a different scenario comes up? So that's interesting to me that they gave him the touchdown.
Well, there are people in this town who might know and might remember that that actually happened during a high school game. I think it was in the 60s or 70s. I can't remember when. I don't think I was living in Lexington when it happened, so it was either late 60s, early 70s. And if memory serves, it was Tate's Creek versus Lafayette, and it was being televised. And if I get this wrong, somebody please tweet at us, a Big Blue Insider one, or call. But I want to say, and I hate to lay this on him because he can't defend himself, but I believe it was Roy Walton for Lafayette who jumped onto the field and knocked a player down. It was running for a touchdown. And he later said, well, I tripped over a TV cable.
But man. It
ended up costing him his job, and he ended up coaching at Tate's Creek eventually and was very successful, won a state title. So, yeah, it's I guess Dickie Maigle was probably the most high-profile player who ever was involved in a play like that. And by the way, the Cotton Bowl that year was played in Arlington, Texas. I'm not sure why. I don't know the history. Because the Cotton Bowl itself, the stadium's is in South Dallas. All right. We heard earlier from Wandale Robinson. He will pick up some key blocks, no doubt, this year from Darian Kennard, who is rated the best offensive lineman in the Southeastern Conference, one of the best in the country. He talked to Curtis Birch about what it's going to be like to have the stadium back at full capacity.
If I'm being real honest, that wasn't my first thought, being excited. My first thought was, damn, I got to really focus in on the cadence. Because I remember my freshman and sophomore year before the COVID really hit, we were down to like big games like Florida, Texas A&M. You can't even hear somebody. Like, I could be right here in front of you screaming at you. You wouldn't hear me. You'd have to read my lips. And that's the first thing that hit my head. I was like, damn. I mean, it's going to be cool, but, like, we're going to have all that energy back. But at the same time, it's like, it's going to be a little tough. Mm-hmm. So, first thought, got to really focus on, you know, having good hearing for mm-hmm. the cadence. But other than that, you know, we were all excited about having full capacity, especially. I know a lot of other stadiums are going to be great, too, about it. So, we're excited for the season. We're excited to get everybody in Kroger Field for real. It's going to be fun. Everybody's going to be, you know, happy. They're going to have a hell of a show when they come see us.
We talked earlier about the offense and Wandale Robinson and how he should really like this new offense, the Cohen offense, as we're going to call it. And Darian talked about it, too, with Curtis.
I'd say setting up a lot. He's setting up a lot of, you know, things that we like to do as an O-line, you know. Running wise, you know, he's very technical with it, especially with like motions and making sure, oh, the defense will catch on to this motion and think it's this play and we're going to run this play. It's going to be a gash. You know, he's just very kind of technical with the way he sets things up and how he wants it done. So I feel like that's what's definitely going to help us this year.
You know, Billy, we've heard a lot about that, about how there's going to be, if not misdirection, some trickery in this offense, just in terms of play action and giving the defense a lot to think about when, you know, and then run pass option, there was a lot of that, but I think this is going to be an offense. It might be a little more intricate, a little more involved, but they've got plenty of time to learn it. And, you know, we'd heard from Darian at the Schlarman golf event, how hard they're working on this offense, but how much they like it.
Right, and, you know, we kind of touched on the play-action scene in the National Football League, and Coach Cohen taking some of that from that playbook. You know, it's a bit of misdirection everywhere instead of just a straight-up fake the handoff to this running back and throw it over the top. It's exciting to hear the guys talk like this, and if the coach is going to achieve balance like so many of these guys have mentioned before, then you're not only going to find success in the passing game, but your offensive linemen are going to be able to block downhill on a explosive rushing attack. And if there's misdirection, yeah, there's going to be chances for those guys to get into space and to make a block at the second and third level. So I'm excited for these guys, not just Kennard and the big offensive linemen, but everybody, because there seems to be a lot of excitement and for a point of emphasis for this program.
You know, we talked about in the first hour about Wandale and how much pressure is going to be on him to perform. Think about the pressure that's going to be on whichever quarterback wins this job. Brand new offense. You've got this great weapon in Wandale Robinson. You've got Chris Rodriguez behind you. You've got Kennard and the big blue wall in front of you. You don't have any excuses, you know. And if it's Will Levis, the kid from Penn State, now, he's already behind the eight ball when it comes to learning the offense. So, but whoever the starting quarterback is, he is going to be carrying, as do all quarterbacks. But I think it's a little bit more this year carrying a big load, don't you think?
I do. And Dick, have you seen Will Levis's TikTok channel? Have you seen any of his videos? Okay, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad. He's got a cannon of an arm, Dick.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And we knew that. You and I had spoken to a reporter who covered Penn State.
That's right.
And that's the first thing she said. She said he has an absolute cannon for an arm. But whatever offense Penn State was running just didn't fit his skill set. And now, evidently, Kentucky's will. Darian Kennard talked to Curtis about what he wants to accomplish every time he walks into the facility.
Get better. I mean, the best way I could put it. I didn't come back just to, you know, sit on what I did last year. I came back and everybody says, oh, I'm a, you know, first round right tackle. Well, all right, now I'm going to show you why I'm a first round left tackle. You know, I'm going to come in here and show that I'm better at left than I am right. That's my mindset also. I'm not here to play with people this year. So it'd be the best way I can put it.
Man, you're going to like that. I'm here to show you I'm a better left tackle than I am a right tackle. I mean, that's saying a lot, isn't it?
Well, he's not here to play with other people either, Dick. You know, it's kind of a bit of a revenge tour here for Kennard to get his draft stock up as high as possible, if you're asking me.
Well, is it revenge or, you know, I don't know. Why revenge?
I think there's a sense of disappointment after the way the last year played out, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm sure they wanted to win more, but I don't know if I'd call that revenge, would you?
I mean, maybe playing out of spite.
Words here.
I just feel like there's an emphasis on improving from last year. And if you're going to improve on that, then you have to take every single one of those demeaning losses, like against Missouri last year, personally.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I got you. Well, definitely Missouri. Yeah, you're right about that. Okay, I understand now. You remember now, you work with me for a while. I'm pretty slow. But no, you're right. I thought you meant Darian with regard to something else. Anyhow, all right. Now, as Billy said, he came back from the draft or from an opportunity to be drafted, and he would have made money. There's no question about that. But shifting over to left, you know that that was as much a business decision as anything, and good for him. This is way in advance of the NIL. But it was a huge decision, obviously, because very few people in America, very few college D1 players had the kind of opportunity that Darian Kennard had. That was to go and get paid as an O-lineman, and they're always in great demand in the NFL. But he got some advice from a guy who did leave at the right time, quite frankly, and has had a solid NFL career, could have played another year at Kentucky, but chose to go. And that was Randall Cobb. And he talked to Curtis about the fact that Randall Cobb reached out to him. They had a great conversation.
You know, Randall, being a UK guy, knew I was going through all that, and he reached out to me and, you know, try to contact me. And he contacted me when we were at, I'd say it was a Friday night, when we got back or before our movie, before I think we played South Carolina, I think, that night. And just talked to him about staying or going, that type of thing. And it was kind of just a, you know, kind of a genuine, you know, what did you go through when you was here with Joker? What ran through your head with your decision to stay or go? Like, how was it different? It's completely different in terms of position.
Yeah.
Because he's a wide receiver, and it's a lot different than a lineman. But it was a good conversation, a good, you know, builder and solidifying what decision I was making. Even then, I was very wishy-washy, flipping back and forth with COVID and, you know, what they were talking about with all the vaccines and what needed to be done with players and how things were going to work out, not knowing how next season was going to go or even if we were going to have next season.
Yeah.
So it was just a lot of back and forth, but it was a good conversation about what he went through and what I was going through at the time, and, you know, how to, you know, base my decisions off that. And whichever road I take, you know, I told my mom, I told everybody. My mom knows this. She told me, she said, son, you are a person, once you make a decision, you're going to stick with it 100%. And I am that type of person. You know, I'm rolling now. I'm here. I made a decision. I'm hitting the ground running. I'm busting my ass like I never even had a chance to go out, you know. So it was just a good conversation to have with another guy who's been in the league and been doing it, been successful. So it's just a humbling feeling that you can talk to those type of guys who have been here.
Not only have been here, but are active in the NFL, Billy. That's why I really like this story, because it's not, and it would be fine if it were a former player who left and had a nice career and then moved back to Lexington to start the rest of his life and, you know, start a family and this and that. Randall Cobb's an active NFL player. And Randall's a guy who has a lot of sweat equity in this program. And for him, I think, to reach out tells me, first of all, what kind of friend, and it's not a surprise, Randall Cobb is a quality person. And number two, that he is willing to reach out. And this is to a player that he didn't know. He might have met him maybe once or, you know, when he was here, but he didn't, you know, wasn't a former teammate, wasn't playing for a coach that he played for, that kind of thing. But the fact that he would do that, I thought was huge. I love it.
Yeah, and that speaks to the culture that was set up, not by the coaches that are here now, but even the coaches before it, to feel obligated almost to a sense to talk to somebody that's in the program now that maybe you don't have a relationship with but is going through many of the same problems that you went through.
Yeah.
Dick, you said that Randall Cobb left early, but it was the right time for him to leave. And that was the decision that Darian needed to make for himself, you know. Whether or not he was going to make money at the next level, I don't think is the question. But is this the right time for Darian Kennard, the human being, to leave? And you ask these young kids to make the hardest decisions of their lives so early, whether it be choosing the college or when to go to that next level, any help from any veteran, I'm sure, was greatly appreciated. So you love to hear that from Randall Cobb, and you also love to hear Darian's mindset, right? There's no one toe in the water, one toe not. You know, there's no post-career ambitions. This man makes a decision and he sticks with it. And right now his main focus is protecting whoever the hell is going to be playing quarterback for the Blue and White.
And opening holes for those talented running backs in front of him. So even more equity for Randall Cobb. I sure hope he makes it back for a game at some point, because when he does, you know, you bump into him on the sideline. And even though he's not playing for the Packers anymore, you know, he was in Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was in his wedding. So that's how tight those guys are. All right, when we come back, we'll talk more SEC football. And another bizarre moment for a Cincinnati Reds player who hit a home run at a bizarre time. We're back in a minute. You're on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats. 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to Craig Skinner for joining us. Thanks again to Curtis Birch for sharing the interviews he did. And by the way, congratulations to Curtis and his lovely bride, Kelly. Married over the weekend, a lovely ceremony. And so we wish the best to them, obviously. You remember, Billy, when Tom Brenneman really brought his career as he knew it to an end with an unfortunate comment in front of a microphone he thought was dead. The same thing that happened with Rachel Nichols, only much worse.
Very bizarre, right? Yes, of course.
Yeah. You remember what was happening when Brenneman was trying to apologize on air during the game?
Yeah, who could forget? A deep drive to left from Castellanos.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Nick Castellanos was up again in Kansas City, led off an inning at Kauffman Stadium, while the Kansas City announcers, they had opened the top of the seventh with a eulogy for a gentleman named George Gorman, who was the father of the longtime Royals clubhouse employee, Pat Gorman. And he had died at age 96 over the weekend. So they had come back, and it was a very nice thing to do, the Kansas City broadcasters. And they were talking about Pat Gorman's dad and, you know, that kind of thing. And as they were doing it, first pitch swinging, as Marty Brenneman used to say, Castellanos launches one into the left center field bleachers. Ironically enough, almost the same spot, same ballpark, where he hit the home run last year while Brenneman was stepping in a big bucket. And, oh, my God, you can't write this kind of thing. And, of course, they're talking, and he's talking about, you know, and George, like Pat, went to KU and went to Bishop Ward High School, and there's a drive in the deep left center field. There's never a great time to eulogize someone during the broadcast, so we apologize for the timing, et cetera, et cetera. How bizarre is that? Wow.
You know, that's crazy. I didn't even know it was the same stadium, Dick, that he had hit the home run in before. That's just even a more wild story. But I got to put all the blame on the broadcast teams, Dick, here. And it's all about timing, right? You don't start an on-air apology for a homophobic slur in the middle of an inning. And I also don't think you do a eulogy before an inning starts either. I mean, maybe you do it after the three outs are over and you have a little time before you take a commercial break. I think this is on the announcers here. But it being the same guy in the same park, that's pretty wild.
I put it on the producers because I promise you it wasn't the announcers. It came with video. So
right,
it,
yeah.
And I say that because it came with video, a picture of the late George Gorman, which tells me, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe the announcer said, let's do it here. But I'm with you. Whoever's decision it was, producers or announcers, yeah. Now, Tom Brenneman, with him, you got to get out ahead of that the moment you can. So I don't know, when is the good time to apologize for that, you know. But in terms of what happened again with Castellanos, so I think the lesson here, of course, is if you're trying to do anything on air and Castellanos is up, let him finish that bat.
That's right.
For Billy Rutledge, that's it. Good night from the garage in Lexington.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.